It's the 19th hole with Michael Williams.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another edition of the 19th hole. Michael Williams, your host, bringing you the best of golf and golf lifestyle week after week after week. This week is no different. We have some extraordinary guests. First up will be Tom Romano of Galvin Green. Tom is a very good friend from a company that makes the very best outerwear on the planet, bar none. We've just had Earth Day, which brings a focus to the environment and sustainability and all of these wonderful, most important things. And Galvin Green is not only a leader in bringing us the greatest outerwear on the planet, they're also deeply involved and a leader in saving the planet and make sure that we have a planet for the next generation. They are leaders in green manufacturing and sustainability, all of these things. So Tom's going to give us a lesson on how they do what they do for the outerwear and how they do what they do as a company, which is making them a leader in that field. Also, we have Charlie Meacham. Charlie is a guy who has been a world-class golf executive. He has been the commissioner of the LPGA Tour. He has been just so many things, but maybe most significantly, he has been a very close and dear friend to both Arnold Palmer and to Jack Nicklaus. And he just has a new book out called Arnie and Jack, Stories of My Long Friendship with Two Remarkable Men. Charlie himself is a remarkable man. And this book is really a fantastic read. Words and pictures that take you back to another era when it wasn't just all about the money. It was about the sport and the camaraderie. And it's a wonderful thing. So I'm really looking forward to talking to him about his life well lived, Charlie Meacham. I just want to say before we start the show, I have obviously moved venues from the previous company, the previous website where I was hosting the show. And, you know, there are transitions. We move on from certain things. And you know, that's the way life works, and that's especially the way this business works. So let that be enough said about that. But I'll say this, that I am so pleased and proud to be a part of the Sports Illustrated family now. You're finding this podcast on Sports Illustrated, part of the Morning Read family of golf writers and podcasters. I am honored to be a part of that family and to work under that banner, Sports Illustrated, is something that's meant something to me since I was a little kid, okay? One of the first things I could do when I earned money was save money up to get a Sports Illustrated subscription of my very own. I remember taking out that little paper thing and sending it in, and it was, what, it was $5 for 6 months or something. And I remember saving up that money and getting that subscription and just waiting for it every Thursday for that Sports Illustrated to come. It's to me synonymous with quality content, and so it means so much to me to have my name, my brand, and my content associated with those two initials, SI. And the Morning Read team, you know very, very well, in a very short period of time, has become the voice, the source for quality golf and golf lifestyle content. So again, it's just an honor to be involved with these folks. I hope they feel the same way, and together, we're going to put together some content that is hopefully entertaining, enlightening, educating, all the things that you would turn on your TV or radio or computer and spend some time to do. That's what you want to be, is educated and entertained, to be captivated. And that's what we aim to do. So again, I'm so pleased, so proud to be part of this thing. And again, as we always say, we do it all for you. You're the whole point of doing this thing. So watch out, y'all. It's going to be fun. So with that, let's take a quick break. We'll come back with Tom Romano of Galvin Green and Charlie Meacham in his new book, Arnie and Jack, Stories of My Long Friendship with Two Remarkable Men. So go get yourself a beverage and a crunchy snack, settle in, and we'll be right back with more 19th Hole. Michael Williams, 19th Hole. Welcome back to the 19th hole, Michael Williams, your host. And, you know, we've been having, like, the most nuts weather in D.C. over the course of the last 2 weeks that I can remember. And that's, you know, saying something, because we've had some crazy weather in the last years. But so in the past 2 weeks, just to give you a taste, a flavor, a feeling for what we've been going through. Last week, the highs were in the mid-80s. Mid-80s, mind you. And I was thinking that we weren't even going to have a springtime. This week, we had, what, highs in the mid-40s? Highs in the mid-40s. And it was snowing about an hour outside of D.C. So my hypothesis is that there is a budding James Bond villain who has a weather machine somewhere and is testing it out. That being the case, we still have to gear up for this thing. And it makes me aware of Earth Day and of things like conservation and sustainability. All of these things come into play when we talk about Earth Day. Not necessarily the realm in which golf excels and exceeds, but there are some companies that are taking the lead in that. One of them is Galvin Green. And joining me today is Tom Romano. He's the head of the U.S. business for Galvin Green, which is, if you don't know, the preeminent outerwear golf company in the world. Tom, thanks so much for joining us again. Welcome back to the 19th hole. How are you, my friend?
I'm good. Appreciate being back, and thanks for having me once again. Always a good time.
Always a pleasure. As people who listen to the show know, I am an unadulterated fan of Galvin Green. I have tried the rest, and I'm sticking with the best, as the old saying goes.
Love it.
You guys have done a magnificent job in producing great product and really producing, I think, a reputation, really, for excellence that goes above and beyond. When people say Galvin Green, that name actually means something. It resonates, and that's due to a lot of hard work by guys like you and a lot of other people as well, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
So again, let's just start at the beginning, though. For people who don't know or aren't familiar with the Galvin Green brand, why don't you give your elevator description of what Galvin is, the mission and vision, and the type of product that you put out there?
Sure. So we're a European company. Based in Växjö, Sweden, which is in southern Sweden, and started in 1990. So it's been around a lot longer than most people probably know. But and you know, we're the number one apparel brand. I should say the outerwear brand in the UK and Ireland. So it's massive there, and it just kind of shows what our bread and butter is. And it's obviously the outerwear. Our rainwear production is. You know, like you said, first when it comes to people's minds, when it comes to performance rain gear. So, yeah. You know, we're pure golf. We are a maximum performance brand. We make product to battle any element that you face out on the golf course, whether it's rain, yeah, sleet, snow, even a hot sun. You know, we produce product to make sure you guys can perform at your best. So, you know, we launched in the U.S. in 2014. And so we've been here for about 8 years now, and we've seen the business really grow over the last, I would say, 2 or 3 years. We've seen exponential growth and in all categories. So we're really excited about where we are now. And I think the future looks really bright for the next few years as well. So
I think
excited.
So as well. And, you know, it's interesting because I have, you know, my variety of little notebooks here on my desk, and it just so happens, this is really coincidence, but, you know, maybe serendipity, that I have this notebook for the 2010 Ryder Cup that's sitting right at the top.
Oh, love it.
Manor, right? And, you know, you're smiling already, you know, when you hear that, because that's really when the legend of Galvin Green sort of hit. Because that was a Ryder Cup where it was raining constantly, and I mean raining buckets. And then the two teams played in it, the European team and the U.S. team. The U.S. team was affected. Their play was affected by the
Absolutely.
Quality of their rain gear. They were complaining about it. And as the legend goes, the European team was able to play much better golf because they had much better outerwear gear. They were wearing Galvin Green. And I think even U.S. players were trying to get some of it, as the legend goes, as, you know, for later rounds, trying to see if they could get their hands on some of this stuff. But that's when I think the legend of Galvin Green was born, and people were trying to get overseas just to sort of get that stuff. And then when it came to the United States in 2014, That's really when you know, sort of hit the ground running. So as I say, it was just funny that this notebook is right on top, but you can corroborate. That really is kind of the story, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely used as a springboard to kind of get our brands. Obviously it was known in the Nordics and in Sweden, Norway, and things like that. But in the UK, like you said, we really used it as a springboard to kind of launch the brand into our brand identity as being we are going to be the number one rainwear brand in golf. And it just showed based on the best players in the world clamoring to get it because they know it makes a difference in their game. So absolutely. I think it definitely swung more momentum for us in the UK and Ireland and in the US eventually down the road. So absolutely.
And you guys work with Gore-Tex, and a lot of people, a lot of products and manufacturers work with Gore-Tex. It's a really well-known name for a material, a product that takes away water, repels water, and wicks away moisture from the body. I think I got that right. And
Absolutely, yeah.
how about them apples, right? Okay.
Well done.
Thank you. So you guys are working with Gore-Tex, but you sort of take it one step further. You're so closely aligned with that company. You're actually sort of developing your two products hand in hand. They're developing around your needs and ideas, and you're using their innovation to fuel your products. I love that partnership with Gore-Tex. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, absolutely. We've become now the number one supplier in golf with WL Gore. And so it's a relationship that started, I think, in the late 90s that's really developed into the, like you said, we kind of walk hand in hand in terms of, at least in the golf world, Gore-Tex is synonymous with Galvin Green, and Galvin Green is synonymous with Gore-Tex. So it's become a great partnership in the fact that people trust not only Gore-Tex, but Galvin Green to protect them from all the conditions that you can face in the on the golf course. And I think it's led us, we're so proud of the partnership because it's led us to become known as one of the leading brands in rainwear. And I think because Gore-Tex is a high quality and expensive product, Galvin Green has that identity of being high end and premium. So the partnership just makes so much sense on both sides. And so it's been a great relationship, and we're excited to kind of see where it takes us and expand on it going forward.
You're listening to Tom Romano of Galvin Green. Michael Williams, your host here on the 19th hole. So you have done, and we were talking about sustainability and Earth Day as we led into the segment. And as I say, a large part of that is sustainability. And as a European, as many more European companies are, if I'm honest, many more European companies are more committed to the ideas of green production, sustainability, these sorts of things. I believe Galvin Green had commissioned a study, some research into golfers and sustainability. Tell me a little bit about that and what kind of findings that you came up with.
Yeah. So we sent out a survey just based on what you're saying, right? As sustainability has become more of a forefront, especially in Europe, totally agree. And it's becoming more of a trend here in the US. But wanted to survey, golf consumers in the UK and Ireland and most of Europe, I believe, to kind of see what their take on sustainability was. And what we found was two-thirds of the people who participated in the survey believe it's at the forefront of what they look for when purchasing products
Wow.
in apparel.
Two-thirds.
Two-thirds. And that was more than what we, exceeded our expectations, seeing that that kind of feedback is so important to people when they produce products. But I think that's the day and age we are. As younger generations kind of take more care and want to be more eco-friendly with everything that they do. So it's exciting for a brand that, we've always been one that is talked about sustainability ever since day one. I mean, Vekra Sweden was voted, I think, a year or two ago as the greenest city in Europe. And that's where our headquarters is. And so, knowing that and telling consumers and saying, hey, it's part of our DNA because that's the culture that we're surrounded with. It just is great to see that consumers around the world are starting to agree and know it's important. So
That's
it's, yeah.
really fascinating to me that that large of a segment of that that survey audience came up that strong in that particular thing. And I wonder now about, so the other side of the Galvin Green thing is that your products are made to last. And I know that when I first met you, I believe we talked about one of the products that you have, and you were saying about the rain suit, which is, it's pricey. It's more than the typical average standard, even the what you would normally consider the highest quality rain suit. It costs more than that, a lot more. But you said to me, Michael, I think the first time, Michael, okay, you buy this suit, your son's going to be wearing it if he's the same size, and maybe his son's going to be wearing it too. So
absolutely.
Sustainability is about resources, but durability is kind of an overlooked part of sustainability because garments last longer. Not necessarily absolutely. The way most manufacturers do that. What? Tell me about your philosophy as far as durability and how that combines with sustainability.
Yeah, I think our creative director kind of said it best when I was kind of talking to him a few months ago, was when you create a product, no matter what it is, you create or you impact the carbon footprint, you impact carbon footprint, right? You create a carbon footprint. When you produce durable products, you obviously can produce less based on the fact that they're going to last longer. So when you produce high quality, longer lasting products, you're creating less of a footprint because you don't need to create product on product on product to fill in based on the longevity of the product you just produced. So I think it speaks volumes to kind of what our DNA is that we don't want to keep producing product that people want to keep buying and buying and buying because we want to produce, a quick sale. We want to produce something that they are going to, that is going to last longer than anything else out in the golf market so that it builds this exclusivity, this uniqueness to our brand that they only want to buy Galvin Green product because they know it's going to last. And I think it ties right into your carbon footprint of that durability is so important. So I think that is where that durability, sustainability comes in. The less products you produce, the better carbon footprint you, impact, the eco-friendly world that we live in. Yeah. So it's super interesting.
It really is. And again, we talked about the price, and again, you've always been honest about it, and you guys aren't ashamed of it, that your price tag is somewhat higher. It's kind of above than some of the other products, but worth it in so many ways. How do you resist the urge to do that sort of cut rate pricing or create a lower price point product that doesn't have quite the quality as the best that you can do? How do you resist the urge to do that thing?
Yeah, I think it speaks to just our brand identity of it speaks to our slogan of never compromise. We never want to compromise on anything that we do just to make something that might not be as good, but might be open to more consumers or maybe more price competitive with other brands. We want to stand alone and know that what you pay for is going to exceed your expectations in terms of performance. And so we always want to stick to our brand identity because it's so crucial for a brand to understand where they are in the marketplace that, it's been built on, and we've seen growth in so many markets that we know our price points aren't astronomical, that people understand that even though it's expensive, it is something worth investing in.
Yeah.
And so, that kind of trend and seeing our numbers go up and up show that we don't have to kind of lower ourselves to stay competitive. We can stand on our own and be proud of what we make and know that consumers are super happy with what they purchase.
Right. That whole theory about the rain suit or any piece of Galvin Green apparel passing down from generation to generation, you're just about reaching the age of the company where that thing, is a reality rather than a theory. I mean, I'm sure you've seen
exactly
right. Some people walking around and, hey, this belonged to my dad and performs just as well as it did for him. That's got to be kind of gratifying to see that.
Absolutely. It's a generational thing that you see, grandparents, parents and kids. And it is kind of cool to see that. I mean, I've had people come up to me saying I've had this Windstopper garment from 2002 that I still wear every day, anytime it's, and it performs just as it did back then. Styling might not be as up to date as it probably should be, but, but the performance is still there. So people, I think, appreciate that, and they get this affinity for the brand because of that type of quality. Right. So it's exciting.
Right. And I'm a timeless styling kind of guy too. So, you know,
yeah,
if you, when you're planning the retro line, give me a buzz. Okay. Cause that'll be,
okay, perfect.
My thing, the retro, the throwbacks. So you have reached a level of proficiency in this area that I imagine would provoke some other companies in the business, in our business, who are seeking to follow your lead in sustainability to call on you. And I would hope that people are humble enough to pick up the phone and say, love what you're doing. Can you give us some pointers? Do you find that people in the industry are looking to you for advice at how they can increase their sustainability efforts?
Yeah, I think it's, I don't want to call it like a copycat kind of league, but everybody kind of sees where trends go and see who's doing it best, right? I think we get a lot of calls on our rain gear just in terms of performance. I think sustainability might be the next step for a lot of brands to start looking at, you know, I should say a lot of U.S. brands. I think in the U.K., Ireland, and Europe, they might be getting more calls than maybe we are today. But the ones that we're kind of receiving is, hey, you guys have figured out how to corner this rain gear in a way that we haven't. You know, how do you, how do you do it? Or can we partner up in some way because we trust the way you produce your garments, but, you know, want to open it to our consumers. And so I think in the U.S., as sustainability becomes more of an issue in the forefront, I think we'll start to get those calls more and more. But I think right now, U.K. and Ireland, to what you pointed to earlier in the segment, was, it seems like such a bigger topic there than it is for the U.S., you know, and I think it's growing, obviously. But I think I do expect over the next, you know, coming months, years, that a lot of people will start to look for Galvin Green here in the U.S. to say, you know, you guys have led this charge. How do you navigate this in a way that you don't lose quality, but you become more sustainable, you know? So
It's a balancing.
Exactly. And it's not an easy balance, but our product team is unbelievable at testing products so thoroughly, to make sure that, we don't compromise our garments, but, maximize the sustainability, that can be offered.
Outstanding. And before we get out of here, I know we focused a lot on the rain gear, outer gear, that sort of thing, but I know there's a lot more in your portfolio now than just the rain gear, but you're always upgrading the rain gear, outer gear, jackets, that sort of thing. And I know for a fact that beyond Scottie Scheffler's win and Tiger getting through four rounds, probably the biggest story was this really cool jacket that you made for the Masters.
Yeah.
So talk about some of the products that you have out for 2022.
Yeah, so that Masters, we created the Gore-Tex jacket in all white with a green and yellow trim that basically was reminiscent of the caddy suits, you know, that at the Masters. That's what we wanted. That was our inspiration, which went over really well and consumers, and we got a ton of media attention on it. So that was great. I would probably talk about our polo collection. Here in the U.S., we've seen from 2021 to 2022, 120% growth in our polo collection. And so it's been a huge jump for us, and it's been great based on the fact that people now consider us more of a full apparel line than just an outerwear line. Mm-hmm. And I think what our designer has done is create a little bit more, found a great balance between European styling and North American styling, where we're finding some unique European designs, but also some more North American commercial ones. And so I would, you know, the highlighting the polo collection is great just because as much as I love being known as an outerwear company, you know, I want to show the versatility of saying, hey, we have fantastic polos that are more breathable and, you know, unique than a lot of other brands that are out there. So that's what we're excited about for spring 22 and going into autumn, winter 2022 as well. And think there's a lot of potential on the polo side of things for our business.
Outstanding. So when people want to take a look at the full range of Galvin Green, I'm sure you have a place on the interweb where they can go do that. What's a good address for that?
Yeah, so obviously our website, galvangreen.com, you'll get to see our full collection. But some of our online retailers here in the U.S. and brick and mortar is, you know, PGA Tour Superstore. You can find online in select stores. TrendyGolfUSA.com, which has been a long partner of ours. Fairway Styles is another online partner. And Carl's Golfland are all ones that we partner with and have been really good partners with us and show the vast majority of our collection and are just – great places to experience Galvin Green and be able to become a Galvin Green consumer.
And join the clubs. Get in line behind me, those who want to become Galvin
Green. Yeah, exactly. Michael's number one on the list.
Galvin Green consumers, Gage. Line forms behind me. Tom, thanks so much for giving the update, man. Again, I am so impressed by what you guys do, the way you do it, both the quality of product that you produce and the sort of the nobility of your production process and what your aims are. And again, keep up the good work. And whenever you have something new to say, please make sure that we are your first stop to tell folks about it.
Absolutely. Appreciate the time, Michael. And hopefully we can do it again soon.
Outstanding. Thanks so much, Tom. That is Tom Romano of Galvin Green. Again, I have a couple of Galvin Green pieces, and I treasure them. They will be going to my son because nobody else is going to get them until I'm finished using them. They have jackets that are so lightweight. I swear I have a jacket by them that I can fold it up into a small ball that can fit inside of my laser, the rangefinder case. It is smaller than my laser rangefinder when it's completely compressed. But when I wear it, it's warming. It cuts the wind. It is absolutely waterproof. It lets me breathe. There's really nobody who's doing anything close to what Galvin Green is doing. I was in Ireland playing golf, and you know, you really need to have some decent rain gear when you're in Ireland. And I was wearing the rain suit of another manufacturer. Very well-known company, Victory, that's all I'll say. And I was so wet by the end of it, I felt like the rain was coming from inside me and out into the air. And I literally tweeted to Galvin Green from the locker room after that round, help, like hashtag help, SOS. It was insane. So really, if you do plan to play in weather, as my boy Ferris Bueller once said, if you have the means, I highly recommend it for Galvin Green. So let's take a quick break. We'll be back with more golf and stuff. Michael Williams, 19th hole. Welcome back to the 19th hole. Michael Williams, your host. You know, there are some people who have had a very privileged perspective from which to view the game. There's people certainly who've played the game and played at a high level, but there's also people who have been around that level of player. People who have not only played the game, but have helped others to play the game, to have learned how the game is about the connections between people. That's what I appreciate. That's what keeps me into it. I mean, I love watching professionals do their thing and watching great players do their thing. But what really, really excites me is watching the relationships grow. And I recently got a copy of a book called Arnie and Jack, Stories of My Long Friendship with Two Remarkable Men. And I'm really fortunate, really honored to have as my guest with me the honor of that book. His resume, I was telling him, his resume would probably take up this whole segment, but he has been an attorney, he's been an executive, a very high profile and successful executive in broadcast and other industries. He has been the LPGA commissioner during the 90s. He has been a golfer, and he has been a friend to some of the most accomplished men and golfers in the world. Please welcome for the first time to the 19th hole, Charlie Meacham, the author of Arnie and Jack, Stories of My Long Friendship with Two Remarkable Men. Mr. Meacham, may I call you Charlie? Welcome to the 19th hole.
Sure. Of course, of course.
Well, thank you again for taking the time. And as I said, you had such an incredible career in your own right, from leading Taft Broadcasting. You have been an attorney or Yale Law School. You've done so much in your own career. Has anyone ever written a book about you?
No, and I probably shouldn't want them to. you never know. But I think maybe with all the I've been pretty busy for a lot of years, and that's why I've never been a very good golfer. So, and Arnie and Jack were very gracious. They would invite me to play, and I'd say, well, you know, I'm not sure I would. But every time I did, I enjoyed it. But I've never been a good player because that, frankly, being a great or good player was not what I wanted from golf. What I wanted from golf was the camaraderie and the, what should I say, the venues, the beauty of the game and the history of the game always meant more to me than my score. So I love it. I always tried hard, but I've thoroughly enjoyed my exposure to the game.
Well, I think we are definitely cut from the same cloth because anybody who listens to this show knows that I picked up the game late. I was almost 40 years old when I started playing for the first time and started playing mm-hmm. when I started working with a golf course company. I wasn't a golfer. I just was working with that company. But I quickly became just enamored of the places right, that you right. play and the people that you meet. And
Exactly. That's it.
Yeah. And that's what comes through. In this book, and just to sort of jump to the chase, you talk about it with the title Arnie and Jack. Tell me a little bit about the book and what prompted you to write it.
Well, it's kind of an interesting story of its genesis. I live at a club here in La Quinta, California, called Tradition. It's a club, a course that Arnie designed, and he had a home there as well. One day, the president of the club said to me, Charlie, you may be one of the very few people, maybe the only one, that had an intimate, close relationship with both Jack and Arnie at the same time. And I said, well, I hadn't thought of it, but probably so. And he said, I would like you to make a talk to our membership, sharing some of your memories. I did that, and it was well received, and I was encouraged to write a book about that very thing, and that's what I've done. But that's the genesis of it.
And the length of that relationship, when did you first meet Arnie and when did you first meet Jack?
Well, I first met Jack actually 52 years ago.
Wow.
Taft Broadcasting decided to build a golf course north of Cincinnati on some land that we owned. And obviously at that time, if you're looking for the designer, who but Nicholas, an Ohio guy, just up the road and just getting started in his design career. So we approached Jack and never been sorry about that. And then since then, over those 52 years, our friendship has grown and blossomed. And we really did a lot of things together, probably most notably, other than the golf course design, I'm trying to think of the right word. We actually filmed and produced and distributed the Golf My Way video, which is probably the greatest, I think, golf instructional video ever. And so we've done a lot of things with Jack over the years. Arnie, I met when I was commissioner of the LPGA. I hadn't known him before that, but he would come out and play in a number of what we used to call mixed team events where women and men would play together. I got to know him really, really well. And when I retired from the LPGA, he and I were visiting about some things. And he said, I'd like you to join me and help me with my business. So I sort of picked myself off the floor. And I said, well, I'd love to do that. So I became in 1995, I guess, his advisor and consultant. And he said, there are really only two conditions to the job, Charlie. One is I want you and your wife to move to Bay Hill, so we'll be close. And secondly, I want you to share my office. He had a big office divided into two pieces with a door between his office and the one I occupied for 10 years. So I did that for 10 years, and it was absolutely the most incredible part of my life to be that close to such an incredible man and have so much fun doing it.
I mean, I just can't even imagine Arnold Palmer saying, okay, I'd like you to work with me, but one of the conditions is you have to work with me. I mean, usually that's the type of request that works the other way. Like, Mr. Palmer, I need to work next to you. It really does.
Well, it was funny because this door between our offices, we were probably, 6 feet apart, his chair and my chair. And he would pick stuff off the desk. He'd get something from the mail, and he'd sail it through the door and say, take a look at this. And so it was a very informal and delightful relationship for 10 years.
We're talking to Charlie Meacham about his book, Arnie and Jack, Stories of My Long Friendship with Two Remarkable Men, here on the 19th Hole. Michael Williams, your host. I was looking at the book, and there are a couple of things that struck me. One is certainly it's about more than Arnie and Jack. It's about the incredible relationships, as you alluded to earlier, that you have with so many people in and around the golf world, from Russ Meyer and the famous pilot involved with golf, and so many other golfers, the wives of Jack and Arnie, Winnie and Barbara.
Yep.
You have
the
women golfers. There's so many people they're involved with. And it's also, the other thing that I note is that it's not a book about golf, really. It's about people.
That's right.
It's about travel. It's about golf courses. There's a little bit of life and business advice thrown in there, too. So it could be called a self-help book. How do you even categorize a book like this? You know, we look at Amazon. What category do you find it in?
I'll leave that up to the experts. I think I would probably characterize it as a book about people that have meant a lot to me in my life. Hmm. And I think there are many others, of course, but in the golf world, people that have meant a lot to me.
And you can see that, I guess, if there's one word that the feeling that I get from you as the author, you know, as a writer myself, the feeling that I feel, the emotion that I feel coming from you is a sense of gratitude. You know, just this thing about, well, look at this life that I've, look at these people. And I get that gratitude, and I get to share it with you as I walk through these, you know, 100 or so pages. It's a pretty remarkable feeling, actually.
Yeah, gratitude is a good word, because I always felt fortunate to have the opportunity that came my way. I didn't ask for any of these jobs I've had, other than the first job when I interviewed to become a lawyer. Otherwise, all the jobs that have come my way have come sort of over the transom. And I've never gotten over feeling deep gratitude that I've had the opportunities. Hmm.
And, you know, I guess me and you both are aging ourselves when you say over the transom, because I happen to know what that means. And I wonder how much of my listening.
That's right. That's a lot of your listeners would not.
Just that's a little window that's over an office door. Used to have them in all the offices. Okay. You may not know what it is.
Ask your dad or Google it.
Okay. You can do that.
Exactly.
The other thing is, you know, it's not necessarily a coffee table book, because I know that's a category of books too, but what strikes me is the beauty, the simplicity of the writing and the beauty of the photography. I mean, I love the pictures that are in here, and it's funny because I searched through it two times, and I don't think that there's a half a dozen pictures of people where the people aren't smiling or just full on laughing. I couldn't find it.
That's right. The my publisher, when we first started working together, said this book cries out for photographs. And so we went to great lengths, and sometimes it's hard to get certain photographs, but for almost, not every, but almost every story in the book, there is a photograph accompanying.
Yeah, I again, look, there's multiples, and there's these beautiful photographs of some of the courses we talk about, even USGA headquarters.
Yeah.
You have Camargo, a course that doesn't nearly get its due as a magnificent track in this country. It's just,
it's true.
It's really just an appreciation of golf and the type of role that golf can play in a life well lived. I think it's a really well done thing there. I bet you have more stories in this. You already have plans in the works for an Arnie and Jack 2? You got a sequel in mind?
I don't know, because it's a lot of work. And I have an assistant who, the way I do books is I dictate to her. She then transcribes, sends it back to me. I edit it, send it back to her. So it's a lot of work for her and of course, for me as well. What I may do, pretty convinced by a lot of people that I should, instead of doing another book, is to do an audio version of this book. It seems to me it lends itself to an audio treatment.
I would say definitely. And if you need voiceover talent, okay, just let me know, because I'm happy to fill in for that with you. Before I let you go, I got to tell you, let me ask you first. Do you have all of these are favorites, like choosing your favorite child. Is there a story or two that you really would point someone to as, hey, when you get into the book, make sure you read this one or that one?
Yeah, there are, of course, hard to pick, but I can give you a couple that I know people really enjoy. Some years back, a player was leading the Masters and chose to lay up on numbers 13 and 15. And while he parred them, he didn't win the Masters because, you know, those holes you got a birdie or eagle.
Mm-hmm.
So the next day, Arnie and I were having lunch, and I said to Arnie, did you watch the Masters yesterday? Of course, I knew he had. And he said, yeah, I watched. And I said, Arnie, did you ever lay up on 13 and 15 at Augusta? And he said, Charlie, do you know how many times I came in second at Augusta? And I said, well, no, I don't, Arnie. And he said, neither do I. Isn't that a great line?
That is.
It was no second place.
That is fantastic.
The other side of the a different kind of story is when Arnie and Kit, his second wife, when he passed away, got married. They were in Hawaii. He was playing at an event in Hawaii. And Kit, when he proposed and they were going to get married, she located a little Japanese JP way out in the wilds of Hawaii and arranged to have this JP marry them. So they're driving out to meet the little Japanese lady. And as they're going out, Kit said, now, Arnie, we're way out in the middle of nowhere. Don't be offended if this little woman doesn't know you. She probably won't know who you are. And Arnie just sort of smiled. And so they get out there. They get married by this little Japanese lady. And as they're walking out the door, the lady yelled out in her little voice, lady, do you know how lucky you are? Arnold, of course, just totally broke up with that. But those are two of my really favorite stories.
Those are great, and I got to tell you, the two of mine that stick out is one about a clinic that Jack Nicklaus is doing at Camargo, which is in Cincinnati,
God, yes.
And that's a great story when someone questions Jack's knowledge of how a pitching wedge works.
I'll tell the story if you have a minute. I can tell it quickly.
Please do.
Jack came to Camargo. Camargo, by the way, is a 1925 Seth Rayner gem. It's a classic old world golf course. And Jack knew Camargo well because he qualified as an amateur for both the U.S. Open and the PGA, things like that, at Camargo. So he came to Camargo several times and did outings for me. And so at this one time, he's given this outing after everybody had finished playing golf. And one guy in the audience obviously had a few more pops than he should have had, but Jack was demonstrating with a sand wedge. He said, now look, the flange of this club is built so you can always get it under the ball and pop it up in the air. And you should be able to do that with practice. And the guy who'd had too many drinks said, nah, that doesn't work on hard pan. Well, Jack didn't pause it. He just turned around. A waiter was going by with one of those old-fashioned steel serving trays. And Jack took the serving tray, put a golf ball on it, and hit six balls off that serving tray straight up in the air, perfect sand wedge. And then he said, is that hard pan enough?
I mean, you got to love it.
And, of course, oh, and the guy was never got over it. I mean, the rest of the guys in the crowd never let him up on that one.
I mean, that's a bad bet calling out Jack Nicklaus about knowledge of how a golf club works. I don't know. That guy's my broker.
I'm sure he never did that again.
I don't think he did a lot of things ever again. He ended his career on a lot of things.
Very, very true. Very true. But these are the kind of stories that, as you say, a lot of them are stories that make you smile. So I hope they do.
Well, there's one that made me smile. And here's one that's about Arnie, who I never had a chance to really sit down and spend a bunch of time with. But I did get a chance to shake his hand once at the World Golf Hall of Fame at the at an induction ceremony. But I love this story. And if you'll allow me, I'll read it from the book.
Of course.
And it's called A Photo Story. Speaking of portraits of Arnie, here's a delightful story about a photograph. It goes like this. Arnie's friend's mother was in a nursing home. She had a number of photographs of friends and relatives on the wall above her bed, including an autographed phony photograph of Arnie. One day, another friend went to visit and, noting all the photographs, said to the lady, Mrs. Jones, these are wonderful pictures, and I'm sure they give you a lot of comfort. She turned and looked at the array of photographs and said, I don't know who all those other people are, but that is Arnold Palmer.
Can you believe it? And I'm sure that happened. I'm sure that's not apocryphal. I'm sure that happened.
I just love it. That's that points to exactly how popular Arnie was, and I think you really captured not only the spirit of the golfers, the spirit of the men, and their capacity for friendship and doing well and doing good, you know, as a part of a life. So really, it also
underscores something that I know both of them felt. Never forget where you came from.
Yeah.
Arnie never forgot La Trobe, and Jack has never forgotten Columbus. And that says a lot to me about the people.
Indeed. It's a really wonderful book, and congratulations on completing that. I hope it's a great success for you. And I guess it's available on Amazon and all the other places you would expect. Yeah.
Yes, and also a little differently, the USGA publication arm is also offering it, and they've sold quite a few copies. USGA publications, I don't know if they call it division or what, but you can go on the USGA website and get it that way as well.
Well, outstanding. It's well worth getting, and I would say for anybody who's out there, get two, because you want to keep one for yourself and maybe give one to a friend.
You are very, very kind. Thank you so much. I've enjoyed this a lot.
Well, thank you so much, Charlie, for joining us. I appreciate it. That is Charlie Meacham. He's an attorney. He's an executive. He's for commissioner and executive of the game, a steward of the game. And this book is about not only his life well-lived, but about the lives of a lot of people who touched the lives of other people. And you can see just how much fun, how much enjoyment they brought to each other and to those people around them. And I hope it would be my wish that they would give a copy of this book to every player who's on the PGA and the LPGA Tour right now to say, hey, look, you're making so much money. You're doing so well. You're flying around in private jets and all that thing. And yet still you're miserable. Okay. Just remember, here's where you want to get to when you're at the end of it and looking back. Can you write a book like this? about how much fun you had and how much fun you gave other people. I think it should be an instructional book that should be given to every pro player right now so they understand how to draw a path.
Fabulous.
You know,
I wouldn't argue with that.
The straight line between where they are now and where they want to get to be. All right.
Good.
Well, we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back with more golf and stuff. Michael Williams, 19th hole. Well, that's it, and that's all for this episode of the 19th Hole. I want to thank my very special guests. This is Tom Romano of Galvin Green. Again, stellar equipment. Go out, price it, buy it, save up, cut down, you know, cut back on the gourmet coffee for a couple of months, and you'll have enough to get that gear. And believe me, it will be worth it. And of course, Charlie Meacham. I mean, this is a guy who's, and I don't know, you couldn't tell by the voice and what you were hearing and the acuity of that man. He's in his early 90s and he is sharp as a tack and has had so much impact on so many people while just trying to be the best person that he possibly can. I think that's a pretty good job description for anybody. You can get this podcast on Sports Illustrated Morning Read. The website is, let me go to where you can find it so you can give it directly. It's go to si.com and Morning Read, and then look for podcasts and you'll find me. And I couldn't be more excited or more proud to be a part of the SI family, the Morning Read family. It's a blessing, and I'm just excited about what we're going to do together. So you can find me there. You can also find the podcast on Spotify and SoundCloud and Apple Music and all the other places where quality podcasting is domiciled. Again, thank you so much for listening. We do it all for you. We'll be back next week with another show. In the meantime, go out, hit some balls, hit them straight, and more than ever, don't count the days, make the days count. Michael Williams, 19th hole.